Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, June 19th, 2001. In the Creekside room this afternoon is John Marty. Today's session is entitled Tax Dollars for Sports Stadium and the Rise in Corporate Subsidies. Let's listen in.
On the roll of the tape or whatever I'm supposed to tell them, and we'll assume that they've got that. Anyway, welcome. I'm John Marty, state senator from Minnesota. Been holding a number of times talking about public policy things, and again this week. And today's topic, I titled it Tax Dollars for Sports Stadiums and the Rise in Corporate Subsidies. And I talked to somebody at lunch who's from Minnesota who said, they're not going to come to this, they're sick of stadiums, because Seattle and Minnesota have been the site of a lot more of those discussions than a lot of other parts of the country, but we're not alone in that, and this isn't meant to be just on sports stadiums, stadia, I guess is the true plural, but I'll use the word stadiums, but the whole concept of corporate subsidies, because last year, the Minnesota Twins pulled together, there was a group that formed, a group of business people in Minneapolis formed a group to task force to bring together a group to find a privately financed ballpark. Within a day or 2 days after they announced they formed this nonprofit group to do that, the Twins formed their own Minnesotans for Major League Baseball, one that they funded, that they formed, that they appointed the appointees to. And they said it was a diverse group of people, and they had a bunch of very brilliant, wonderful people on it, some of whom were presumably neutral on the stadium, and some of whom were strong supporters of their past bids. And I went and spoke to this group, and afterwards when the guy said, well, he thought I was sincere and he liked my points, but why wasn't I out there speaking against other corporate subsidies? And my point was, yes, I have been, and I see the same problem in both of them. And the context, which is, I don't think, unique to Minnesota, but Minnesota may be a worse situation than a lot of others. We're in a situation now where while we have, at least nominally, a budget reserve surplus, 4 years in a row we've been cutting taxes. Here's an extra chair. We've had a budget surplus 4 years running and cutting taxes and giving rebates 4 years in a row. But despite that, we, like most other states, I think we're not unique in the terms of schools are laying off teachers, and that's happening year after year, cutting back programs, athletic fees, and districts for high school and middle school kids to participate in sports are going up to $200 for a sport. And there are an awful lot of kids who can't pay that, and they just, oh, I guess I'm not interested in the team. They don't tell their friends we don't have the money. Our nursing homes in Minnesota are struggling to keep staff. The turnover is extremely high because they don't have the money to operate. Our pollution control agency is laying off 10% of its staffers. You wouldn't know we have a budget surplus, but the point is, for one reason or another, we're not meeting basic needs in the state. Our funding for homelessness, we put an extra $1 million in. Our homeless shelters turn away people every night, and in Minnesota winters, that's a bad idea. But despite this, despite the fact the government doesn't have the money for those things, we seem to be very eager to provide subsidies to businesses. And I would argue the people who least need the subsidies get the most subsidies. And before I go further, I was going to define what I mean for today's talk by a business subsidy. It's not something that's given across the board to everyone. It's a favorite treatment. It's a particular subsidy to a particular business, voted on by a city council, a county board, state legislature, federal government. It's a specific financial benefit, whether it's cash or land or infrastructure or some tax break nobody else gets. You get the tax break, nobody else does. In effect, everybody else is paying that subsidy. A business gets a subsidy, presumably somebody's got to make up the loss of revenue. Other businesses pay for that. And these are usually sold in the media. You have a county commissioner and a private business person standing up there announcing some great plan, and it's always a win-win situation. oh, the public is a big winner and they're happy to participate because they win in this deal too. And again, I'm not one who believes they're always a win-win situation. Somebody's winning, but the taxpayers ultimately pay for the cost of it. Let me give you a couple of examples, and I'm going to use the stadium one as a model for the talk. But the federal government 2, 3, 4 years ago with the new digital technology, the digital broadcast spectrum, their public airwaves, we've always described broadcasting as public airwaves, and they were basically giving away the federal government spectrum. I think people like John McCain and Bob Dole, when he was still in the Senate, were actually talking about this was a $90 billion federal government giveaway. You didn't hear about a lot about this. A couple of newspapers did reports. Interestingly, the TV and radio stations did zero on it. And $90 billion is a lot of money, and it's public money. We give them something for free. I would define that as a subsidy. In Minnesota, and again, some of these are examples just from Minnesota because that's where I work, that's what I'm most familiar with. The Mall of America, I don't know what it's called elsewhere in the country, the Mega Mall, the world's largest temple towards consumerism, is hoping to expand. It's the biggest in the world, and there's some vacant land north of it. We tore down an old sports arena so they could build a new sports arena. We tore down an old sports arena, vacant land, cleared, it's just flat, a parking lot and gravel and other things. And if you had to pick the most developable piece of property in the state of Minnesota, it would be that. There were plenty of people who would be glad to get it, and it was virtually, through a complex series of agreements, was given to the owners of the Mall of America. And that's not good enough. We had to subsidize it as well with to help them find money to develop this land, which they will make good money off of. And as I said, I think other businesses, other individuals pay for it. And another example I'll give, because it shows where we're making choices. Government is deciding which business is going to win and which aren't. Best Buy, which I believe is now a fully national chain of consumer goods, the owner of that is a Minnesotan who just coincidentally happens to be a billionaire. He's building a new corporate headquarters, and he was talking about building it up in one of the farther out suburbs, and I suppose he could have possibly built it in another state too, but they ended up building it in Richfield, just an inner ring suburb of Minneapolis. They're building it there, and they're doing it with about a $40 million subsidy. Again, this guy doesn't really need it. His business is doing very well, but in doing so, they clear out existing car dealership who's been suing for the last couple of years, claiming he's not getting enough money out of it. Whether his lawsuit is, I would argue, is probably just so he can make sure he can get the highest possible payment out of it. But they cleared out his thriving auto business and 200 homes that they had to be, for legal purposes, defined as blighted. But if you looked at the pictures of those homes and you looked at the pictures of any real estate listing, you would not call them blighted homes. They found some technicality by which they could call them blighted. But we give a $40 million subsidy to that. But as I said, the one I was going to use for a model of talking about this, sports stadiums, they are the most visible, clearly, in the country. There are very few states that have major league sports teams who haven't gone through this, or somebody mentioned to me earlier, Portland is in the midst of discussing this. And it's always under the threat or other things. In Minnesota, oh, we're not threatening, we're just telling you what we'd like to do. And no, we've been very nice. And in the Twins 4 years ago, they started that way. We weren't going to do any threats. Then it got to the point where they said, we're going to move the team out of the state if you don't do this by, and this was manufactured by some politicians along with the team. The politicians encouraged them to set a deadline. So we had a special session in October and November, and if you don't have a deal cut in which there's a subsidy by the end of November, the team is moving to North Carolina. And the governor actually told the team owner to cut a deal. I thought he meant cut a deal with the legislature. No, he was talking about cutting a deal with an owner in North Carolina. And anyhow, he lost that year. I was blamed by my own majority leader, who was on the other side of the issue, as being the biggest single cause of the failure of it to pass, which he was angry. I took it as a compliment. But it's they're back again, and this year, if a few other things hadn't happened differently, I think he would have obtained his subsidy. And since I've been in the legislature, Minnesota's professional basketball team, the Timberwolves, got a public subsidy of less than $100 million, but it was a sizable subsidy. The Minnesota Wild Hockey Arena was built in St. Paul to lure the team here. We lost the team, not because we didn't build them a stadium, but because the owner was mad about some other things. And so they built a new stadium for a team, and it's all a clever gimmick. And my point about this is, what we're trying to do here is subsidize a private business, despite what they say about how they're losing money. Most of the owners are making money. They're pretty smart business people. They are doing very well. An economist from the University of Chicago, I remember hearing about 1996 or so, he said he was interviewed on National Public Radio about how, well, you know, right before the strike, something like 22 of the Major League Baseball teams were saying they were losing money. Then after the strike, was said, well, it was more like 16 or something. And now they're saying it might be more like 5 that are really losing money. And what did he think about all this? He said, I think they're getting closer. And he said, you know, I don't know. He said he thinks they're getting closer to the true number. But he said, we as economists, unless they open their books to us, we can't know. Despite the fact government's writing out these big checks and doing this with careful consideration, we don't know if they're making money or losing money. Twins owners claimed he's lost big money over the years. They could be, but they won't show us that. And the economist said, well, the way we as economists look at this is most businesses, if they're losing money, if you can't see if they're making or losing money, if they're privately held things and you can't tell, we usually can tell something by the price of the enterprise. And professional sports franchises have been going up much faster than inflation. He says that's usually an indication, not always, that they're making money. But anyhow, they've got, I think very few people would argue with the fact, including the leagues themselves, that they got dysfunctional economies. Baseball is worse than most. And since the strike in 94, 95, whenever it was, no team in the bottom half of the league in revenue has won, I believe, even a single one of like 180, 190, 200 postseason games. And no team in the bottom three quarters of revenue has won a single World Series game. And I say this all knowing at this time the Minnesota Twins, when I left town, were still in first place, and they are the bottom team in revenue. And I'm actually kind of happy about that, but also kind of disgusted at what that might do for the stadium play.
They're still in first place, by the way.
They are. Okay. Yeah. When I left, they had just Cleveland had dropped a game or so, but I didn't know since Friday, I guess. In any case, because of the dysfunctional revenue sharing thing, and again, the Twins, if they play well this year, they could conceivably do what we hope they'll do and win a World Series, and they blow all those statistics to pieces. But in a sense, you might say this is the exception that proves the rule. There aren't going to be a lot of teams like that who are very low in revenue who make money. And the Florida Marlins a few years ago, when they mid-season bought all the high-priced talent, won the World Series, sold them all off, it suggests that the economy is pretty dysfunctional. And they're hurting themselves in the long run. But basically what they've done is they've gone out in community after community, you got to give us the subsidy so we can make more money because we need to compete. The small market teams, Minnesota's Twin Cities are the 14th largest media market in the country, but that's small market to baseball, and therefore we need to have more revenue to do this. Of course, as soon as we all get the new stadiums, then the New York Yankees are already asking for a $500 million subsidy. The mayor of New York wants to give it to them. The team on top of the world in terms of money is saying we need more, and they're going to just drive it to new heights. And it's not that the stadiums don't pay for themselves, they do. I put out a privately financed stadium proposal several years ago, which the media kind of doesn't pay much attention to those things, but the money you raise from a new stadium is enough to pay all your current bills, all your current salaries, plus inflation, plus pay the debts for the new stadium, and still leave money left over. Why the luxury suites, higher price concessions, I mean, in the end, it's not, stadiums don't generate free money. Somebody's paying more through concessions, ticket prices, and so on. But they do this, they come around community to community. Usually voters, when they're put to referendums, vote them down. I think that's what happened with the Mariners, and then they went around the voter intent. Happened in Milwaukee. There, I think it was, well, voters rejected using gambling revenues to fund it, so the legislature came back and decided, well, they rejected gambling money, they didn't reject a sales tax, so they do it that way. And then other times they do win referenda. I was here a few years ago when the Seattle Seahawks football one came up, and if I recall, it passed by less than 1%. And it was sold by the public will decide this one. Let the public decide. And so at the time, I don't know if he still is, but Paul Allen from Microsoft was the 8th richest guy in the world. And he's asking the public to subsidize it for him, but of course it's not for me, it's for you guys. I'm buying the team to save it for you guys. You just give the money and we'll be all happy here. And I saw a lot of the media that they were using on it. He paid for the election. That was one of the conditions. He not only bought the election by paying for the ads, he actually paid for the election judges, the ballots, everything. New concept of buying an election there. and he refused to debate. I mean, we want the people to decide, but we don't want to have a debate about it. We want to just blast them away 34-1 spending. And they did, and they won by a very narrow margin. Again, that was a big uphill battle. They start with the polls against them. So sometimes the voters do approve it. Usually under, one, the threat team's going to leave. Two, the mistaken economic analysis that shows it's going to cost you less to give us all this money than if you don't. But I'd argue that giving the subsidy ends up basically, at least in sports, subsidizing a broken economy in the way similar that you give an alcoholic some more money, they buy more liquor with it. You don't fix the problem, you're just subsidizing it to a new level. Baseball, football, all the sports things, again, that's not different in most ways from the corporate subsidy issue in general. Again, it's more visible, and Northwest Airlines came to Minnesota legislature a number of years ago. We need help. A couple of guys bought out the thing with borrowed money and then sold off all the aircraft and leased them back and used funny money to make themselves very rich. And in the process, they needed a little bit of money to help them. Taxpayers did do it again that time. It was, we need it for the state's economy. One of the owners of that ran out to California and spent $30 million or so losing a race for governor out there with it. I was going to say, it's the first time we in Minnesota publicly financed their campaign. but they do this. The only difference between sports and that is that sports do have, I mean, we have more pride in being home of the Minnesota Twins than being home of Northwest Airlines. Both are important to the economy in some ways, Northwest probably much more. But the subsidies are very costly. They're, I would argue, usually not appropriate and unnecessary. And these are all cases where a select business or businesses are getting a subsidy that everybody else pays for. And usually the things they talk about for some of the special taxes, we do entertainment taxes. Well, bowling alleys in Woodbury, Minnesota may see themselves not as benefiting so much from a twin stadium as they would see themselves as competitors in the entertainment dollar, but nevertheless, they do it. What drives these corporate subsidies? It's not public opinion. It's public opinion usually, almost 100% of the time, starts out in opposition. With a heavy sales job, you might change it. It's not a neutral assessment of the value. I'll get into that a little bit more in a minute, but it is, I'd argue, heavy lobbying from the subsidy seeker. It's cozy relationships and good access to government officials. It's contributions, it's gifts. The people who seek the subsidies are always well-connected players who are well-known in the government circles, at the city hall, the county courthouse, the state capitol. They're always the people with the connections, well entwined in the community. And what are the details? Well, let me say one of the tricks used is complexity. I would argue the whole concept of using a stadium to subsidize a sports team is kind of hidden. When I made my offer in 97, the real issue is we want more money to manage our economy, to get more profits for me, the owner, for me to pay my players. We want more money. They don't need an outdoor stadium. Metrodome in Minnesota is not made for baseball, and they've got a good argument that it's not the best baseball arena. But they could easily build their own arena, and I introduced a bill to show them how to do it. Using the revenues from the new arena, using only their numbers, how it would pay the cost of building it, as I mentioned earlier. And I suggested at the end of when I introduced that, I pointed out that this does one thing clearly. It gives them the new beautiful outdoor ballpark made for baseball. Every bell and whistle they wanted. Retractable roof, because you need roof sometimes, you don't want it other times. Everything they wanted. Their cost to the stadium, their choice of design, and how to pay for it, and still make more money off of it. And I said it would 100% take care of their stadium needs, without even a contribution from the owner. It would take care of some of their financial needs, provide a little bit more money than they were making now. The only thing it didn't do was fully meet their economic desires. They didn't want an extra $5-10 million a year, they wanted an extra $50 million a year. And I suggested, look, if it doesn't fully meet that need, why don't we build them the stadium, have them build their own stadium under this idea? And if it doesn't give them enough new money, then we can have a legislative vote on should the taxpayers in Minnesota write out a check for so and so many millions to Carl Pohlad, the owner of the Twins, every year, or not? And if we're going to write out a check every year, how much should it be for? Let's have a debate over that. They don't want the debate over that, so what do? They hide it behind the stadium issue, which you can sell us. It's for the good of the public. They use part of the complexity is sort of sham schemes. Zero interest loans, that's a favorite, or low interest loans. That's not really it. The owner of the Twins actually owns Marquette Bank of Minneapolis. So I, this year during our legislative session, I figured if they weren't scared of this, they would have sued me for trademark infringement or something, but I made a phony press release using the Marquette Bank logo and Marquette Bank, and April 1st, 2001, I picked the right day to do it. And Pohlad offers no interest loans, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and using all the words I could find out from what the Twins were using. Marquette Bank President Carl Pohlad announced a new no interest loan program for home buyers. Pohlad said the bank would offer 20-year loans to home buyers interest free, which is what their legislation called for. Pohlad explained the offer by saying home ownership is, quote, a big asset to the community. He said he wanted to make it easier for Minnesotans to buy homes. Mr. Pohlad said, it was an easy decision. After all, I'm not giving them the money. They're paying it all back, so it's free and it won't cost me anything. In a little footnote at the bottom, a news story we're not likely to see. I thought it made the point pretty well, but I mean, nobody sees it. The news media is not going to print a phony press release. But they use zero interest loans as a concept. The other one, and one of the biggest ones they do, is this is a joint venture. We'll contribute some money, and you, the taxpayers, will contribute some money. And this works out really nicely. The one that, and this is how it worked for the Minnesota Wild Hockey Arena. It's the one that's been proposed most often in the 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 different offers Minnesota Twins have had. And having watched what happens in Milwaukee and you name it, communities around the country, there have been 20, 30 of these. I think it's top. The public subsidies in the 90s were well over $10 billion in new sports stadiums. And the trick is that we're going to give something, you're going to give something. The first offer the Twins made in 97 was the owner was going to make an $87 million contribution, and later on the media found out, well, what they were really saying was going to be a loan. And so, again, it was the thing, we're making a contribution. But even when they are really paying back the thing, when they're actually paying the money, it's through what I'd argue is the public's money. The scheme was, and most of them in Minnesota have involved, the public will pay most of the cost of building the arena. Then the team owner's contribution will be the naming rights. We build the facility, they get to name it, and they get the money from the naming. And that's a big issue, because naming rights on these facilities, I mean, Pac-1 ballpark, you can name, we got the Target Center and XL Energy Center, and there's no stadium in the country now that I've waited for. They've got the Frito-Lay Bowl, and so I waited for the Tidy Bowl, but we haven't had that. But the naming rights are worth literally $2 or $3 million in the city, like the Twin Cities, per year. So over 20 years, that can be, in today's dollars, $40-60 million or more. And so the way these schemes usually work is the public's going to put the money in for the construction, and they'll pay us back with the revenue that's generated from the arena. In other words, they're not really putting in their own money. And the way I tried to illustrate this was, let's reverse it. Why don't they build the arena and we'll donate the naming rights? And then under that thinking, it would be the same thing. We're still donating something, we'll donate the naming rights. And they say, well, what right do you have to name it? Well, same right they would have under the other scheme. But so they use that kind of trick in many ways. The next thing they use, phony economic analysis. I've never seen a stadium or other corporate subsidy of any kind go through in which they haven't had some well-respected accounting firm, usually a nationally known accounting firm or another, come in and provide economic numbers on how the payback to the public is many times what it costs. Every time they come up with it. And you know, when you find out who's paying the bills of the accounting firm, it's not a surprise. I mean, 100% of the time the results say taxpayers put in this much money, look how much they get out of this. Economists who look at the issue all agree with each other too, but they come up with a different conclusion. I think the most recent one I've seen was a guy from Washington University in St. Louis, came up with an analysis of 30 different stadiums around the country in the last decade that had been subsidized that they analyzed. And of them, 27, they couldn't find any real significant economic impact on the community. Three of them they could, but it was all negative. And there was a congressional study 5-6 years ago that showed the same thing. The neutral economists from Stanford and Indiana University, well-respected national folks, they can come in and explain why. And I'm not the economist, but their arguments make a lot more sense to me than the other side, which usually pretends that, well, you build the stadium, the team stays here. Of course they're not going to stay otherwise, even if they do. And therefore, the income taxes the players pay, because they're paid so much, they pay high income taxes, and that's money that's new to the economy. Well, where does that money come from? And what the economists will tell you, you're forgetting half the equation. And that is, if somebody's paying those players millions of bucks, that money is flowing through the economy. I buy my ticket, I buy Coca-Cola, and they advertise on the games, I do whatever. Somehow or another, it's my and your dollar that goes to it. And if the team leaves town, you'll lose that player's income stuff. But it's not like the people who go to the games and the people who advertise are going to take the money and throw it in the wastebasket. They're going to use it on something else, which also generates a roughly equivalent amount of money. And so there's the phony economic analysis, and you get the neutral economists. You don't find them saying the same thing. It's a totally different thing. Then I was going to use one that's not true of every state, but probably 40-some plus states have the system of tax increment financing, or TIF, which most people, I've heard of it, but I don't know quite what it is. And it deserves its own mention as a form of corporate subsidy because it does two things. It combines complexity and the phony economic analysis. And the concept is you have a piece of property that's undeveloped or it's very low value property. We redevelop it, it's worth a lot more money, they pay a lot more in taxes. So the increment in the new taxes that they will pay from the current taxes that they do pay, we can take that money because it wouldn't be there otherwise, and we can use that to subsidize the development. And that's the subsidy that was used in this Best Buy corporate headquarters. That's the subsidy that's used, the only baseball ballpark in the last 10 years that's been privately built in San Francisco. They did actually get 5% or so of their money was public money. It was a tax increment finance subsidy. So there is some even there, but tax increment financing is a wonderful system for people because it's so complicated, nobody can figure it out, including a lot of the city officials who tend to use it. Not ill-intended, but they're very good at, you have people coming in, experts saying, here's how you're gonna benefit, here's how we're gonna benefit, it's gonna cost nobody anything. It's free money. And that's usually, they don't use the term free money, but that's the way they sell it. Because people use the word free money and all of a sudden they kind of, wait a minute. But they do really seem to, I think some city officials in smaller communities actually believe it is free money. I think most others see through that. But tax increment financing happens all over the place. And again, using examples that I know best because they're ones I've been suggesting we ought to stop, in the city of Minneapolis, which Minnesota has all kinds of reputation for being ahead of the country in some ways, but Minneapolis has a lot of homeless people, it has a lot of economic problems, a great deal. But the entire downtown area has tax increment financing district on top of tax increment financing district where we use these subsidies. And the biggest one in recent years was the pedestrian mall, Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis, beautiful street. The whole south end of its several block area, they decided it was not pulling its weight in terms of high quality retail and everything else. So the city council wanted to redevelop it. There are two developers, two biggest developers in Minnesota were coming in and trying to buy up the property and they needed the city's permission to condemn properties and so on there. One of them said they were willing to do without any subsidy. The other one wanted $40 or so million in tax increment financing. And in exchange, they were going to build a Target store downtown. And the city council president, I'm not kidding, said that that we need a mid-level retailer downtown so people who live there can buy toilet paper. It was in the public debate about this. They talked about this. And I agree, it's really nice to have mid-level retailers instead of just the expensive shops downtown. But Minneapolis isn't that large a city. It's 300-some thousand people in the metro area of the Twin Cities is 2.5 million, but Minneapolis itself, 370, 380,000 people. And they put 40, or some would argue, $60 million. So complex, the people who are pushing it and opposing it can't agree on how much it is. $40 to $60 million in a tax increment subsidy to this district in exchange for picking the developer that was gonna build a downtown Target store. I told them they could, for less than a tenth of that cost, they could endow a shuttle bus to the Lake Street Target store so people could get things.
Or buy everybody
toilet paper. Or buy them all free toilet paper. It could be a whole lot. You could buy a couple of mountains of toilet paper for that. But the test they use, the but-for test for tax increment financing, and this is what exists everywhere where it's used, and that is that but for this subsidy, but for this development, but for the subsidy, the development would not occur. And in this case, it just to show, they could take, and I'm sure they could show with their economic analysis, that the new development was going to pay over the next 20, 30 years at least 40 or 60 million more in taxes than the old current one was. But that assumes nothing's going to happen, that property is just going to crumble and eventually it'll just collapse on itself and nothing will happen and they'll just leave vacant land there. No, it's very valuable land and somebody's going to redevelop it, and there was already in this case another developer competing to get it without the subsidy. Now they could document for their purposes the $40 to $60 million increment between current development and there, but they couldn't clearly develop it between one development and the other. So you gotta ask, is a downtown mid-level retail store worth $40 to $60 million of tax money? If so, let's just appropriate the money and buy the store. You could do it a lot cheaper than that, but the way it works, they get so tied up in their own complexity, they do things that I think you'd have to call absurd. Which brings us to one more thing about that, and I wanna wrap it up quickly for discussion, but it brings us to the political connections. The woman who is the chief economic development officer for the city of Minneapolis, who cut that deal, less than a half year later, took a job with the developer who got the subsidy, the revolving door. You go in and wonder. It's interesting. She has since moved on. She's now the state. The governor appointed her the state's commissioner of economic development. So she's now back in the government side of thing and can do more nice things like this. And it's not unique to her. I don't mean to pick on that individual. There are plenty of others who do this. They go between the giver of the subsidy and the recipients of the subsidy, and they become the experts. So they're very talented, wonderful people, but they end up putting together these subsidies that people end up paying for. Then finally, the other couple of things that cause these things to happen is heavy PR. These subsidies would not happen without people telling us how good it is. In stadiums, they have the added benefit that the news media, in large part, tends to be part of their PR agency. Newspapers sell papers. I mean, we read the sports section. A lot of people read that first in the newspaper. Television and radio stations, a lot of them broadcast the games. Sports scores are something people would pay attention to. It's worth it to them. They hype it. It's great. It's great for their ratings. They hype it heavily. And so now every game, and there's one who's been listening a lot more this year with the Twins in first place, I'm hearing a whole lot more hype in the middle of the game. Just constant talk about how, we really hope they can do this and write your legislators and do this. Taxpayers aren't going to pay anything for it. It's going to cost them almost nothing. In this case, this year is when the Minnesota Twins say they've got a $300 million proposal, and their literature says 83% is going to be covered by the owner, Carl Pohlad. And they haven't discouraged talk that it's as high as 97% is going to be paid by the team. And they say, well, public opinion's changing. Well, you tell everybody, hey, you can do this, and you'll put in 10 cents, and that's your only contribution. More people will buy off on that. They've asked me, what do you think is an appropriate subsidy? And I've said, zero. They said, well, what if it's a smaller one? I said, well, if they're asking for $300 million, I'm going to speak up a lot stronger than if they're going to try for $3 million. The principle is the same, but the dollar amount makes a difference. And I think that's true for most people who may oppose it, but, well, if it's just a tiny percent, they don't mind. Well, the media keeps saying this over and over, 97%, 83%. Star Tribune, the Minneapolis paper, the biggest paper in the state, ran an editorial in early June saying 85% is covered by Carl Pohlad. So I wrote a commentary on it, pointing out that the minimum contribution under the plan, that's before the legislature, the minimum contribution had to be at least $226 million from the public. Out of a $300 or more likely $350 million stadium, that's not 13%. That's over half, a lot over half. And if they think the public has changed its views on it, quit hiding behind the facts. But they use misinformation. And when the media is your PR firm, you don't have to worry about the accuracy of it. They just keep repeating it. And when I got the commentary published, the commentary editor, who I called to ask if they'd print the thing, she said, well, you kind of think we've been duped, huh? And I said, well, I'm just showing you the numbers that I've read and that I've seen, and I haven't heard anybody challenge them because they can't. They're asking for this much from here and this much from here, and it totals $226-some million. And again, with the accuracy, they keep going on over and over. A few years ago, they had an editorial, it's just pennies a week, and they calculated somehow the public subsidy was going to cost the average person just pennies a week. The same deal they were talking about, I showed how it was St. Paul in that case was going to try and get the Twins over there and build a stadium. And I calculated the cost was St. Paul taxpayers were going to have to pay $8.5 million a year, and based on the city population, is an annual tax hike of $31.50 for every man, woman, and child in the city, $126 per family of four. This total is $337,777 over 30 years. That's just pennies in the pennies per week. And if you take the concept of 30-year payback, you break it down per person per week, it does become pennies per week, but I would argue that $126 for a family of four is not what most people would call, just what I think the other term they use is, a relatively small chunk of change. But the final things they use, lobbyists, the Minnesota Vikings this year, they know they don't want to be left out. They're asking for a new stadium. despite the fact they've been making money, and the owner, who's a Texas billionaire, bought the team, which is now worth $100 million more than he paid for it a couple of years ago. He needs a new stadium too, and he doesn't want to be left behind, and he knows the Twins are ahead of him in the pecking order. So what they came up with was a study this year. They have 19 lobbyists, and that may be nothing in Washington, D.C., but we have maybe 1,100 lobbyists in the state of Minnesota for every one of 10,000 issues, 10,000 interest groups, 10,000 everything else. Just one entity, the Minnesota Twins, I bet that's the largest number of lobbyists for anything, had 19 lobbyists. What were they asking for? $150,000 subsidy for a study of whether we, how we should address the Minnesota Vikings and Gophers football stadium needs. And why are they spending $500,000 to $1 million to lobby for a $150,000 subsidy? Because as they admitted in the paper as well, if the state gives this subsidy, they've acknowledged, if we fund the study, we've acknowledged that the Vikings have a stadium problem that we have to address. So they use a heavy number of lobbyists. I'd argue public officials may actually have a much better chance of coming up to a fair and neutral assessment if we didn't have the heavy lobbying around. Not that there's anything evil about lobbyists, but frankly, they're there to make a case for one side, and there weren't 19, there wasn't a single lobbyist on the other side. And finally, campaign contributions, which I'll be talking about more next week. Carl Pohlad and his family in 1996 campaign, right before their biggest push. I think they just sat down in a room and wrote out all the checks one day. Checks were all dated the same day. They gave, and this is interesting, they don't just give to the individual candidates, which a lot of people do. And a lot of people give, not a lot, but some people give money to this Democratic candidate and that Republican candidate. They call themselves independent voters, and there are lots of people like that. But I don't know how many people in this room have ever written a check out to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party the same day. But these guys did. They wrote big checks to both parties, the Senate Democratic Caucus and the Senate Republican Caucus, the House Caucus of each party too, and they wrote out $10,000 plus checks to each of these entities. The owner and his three sons did, and when one of the newspaper reporters questioned him on it, he said, well, why are you giving money to both parties? Well, we didn't see this as a partisan issue. We saw it as a bipartisan thing, which I suggested meant they had new meaning. They were trying to buy both parties. And one of their lobbyists said, you know, why are we making contributions? The Pohlad family's never been big political givers. He said, well, he was honest. They've never had an issue this big before the legislature before. I don't believe most of my colleagues, and I'll talk more about this next week, I don't believe most of my colleagues are crooked or bought off people in either party. I think most are honorable people. But boy, you tell me anybody who gets a check for a good chunk of change from some stranger that's not going to listen a little more when that stranger calls them and says, can I talk with you for a few minutes? Who's not going to be more favorably inclined? It buys the access, the goodwill. Are corporate subsidies a bad thing? Not necessarily, perhaps. I happen to think if they are justified, it would be extremely rarely. States and communities use them to try and lure jobs. Federal Reserve Bank economists in Minneapolis have written heavily about how if you want to do competition between the states, it should be who can provide the best educated workforce, the best infrastructure, the best other things, the healthiest communities and so on, and presumably the lowest tax rates. Because all those things might be seen as beneficial to business. You combine those things, which might be contradictory, that's where you do it. If you're an efficient government that runs great schools and everything else and can do it relatively cheaply, that might be how you compete. And some states tend to go for a better educated workforce. Some tend to go with the Mississippi types, tend to go with the lower trained workforce and the lower tax base. But that's how you compete. When you start having people write out checks, you get in a bidding war between communities or states. That's what the league is trying to do. Again, back to the Twins example in 97, the North Carolina owner who was going to buy the team after the deal fell through at the Capitol didn't. No surprise. I mean, we were going to move a team from the 14th largest market because it's too small to the 46th largest. They didn't move. Now the threat is they're going to contract the league and get rid of two or three teams. I don't think it's highly likely, but like then I couldn't prove it wouldn't happen. But the guy in North Carolina who's going to buy the Twins He's the same guy the Mariners used as their shield to get theirs after they got their stadium. He's the same one that Bud Selig in Milwaukee used to get their stadium. Then he was the one from Minnesota, and he all of a sudden refused to pay. And, well, he wasn't going to buy the team anyhow. But that's the way they worked it. They worked it heavily. The bidding between states, the federal government could stop it in a minute if they wanted to. And I wouldn't argue that there might be times when you subsidize for environmental cleanup, but you can pay for that directly. Instead of subsidizing the business for doing it, if you've got a piece of property that's contaminated, nobody's going to develop it until it's cleaned up, you pay for the cost of that. You don't just give the business money and say, hey, you develop this, you will do that. I was going to say, even though there might be some legitimate purposes, it's very heavily misused. My solutions, real quickly, I went on longer than I wanted. Cut through the complexity. I've got a bill to abolish tax increment financing in Minnesota. If you want to build a Target store downtown Minneapolis, tell the taxpayers, we're going to pay this much of your money because we think this is in the public interest. Be upfront about it. Don't hide behind this free money concept. And make it simpler. Number two, educate the public what's going on. I wrote a commentary in the Minneapolis paper a week after they did their one about how it's 85% paid for by the owner, showing how it was less than half. You got to get the facts out, which is hard. And then finally, block the campaign contributions and gifts from interest groups, a whole separate issue. And federal action could stop this bidding war and the sports teams immediately. Regardless of how this all works out, these things are extremely costly. And you can break it down to, I mean, I suppose you could take any subsidy of any size to anyone for any purpose and justify it as it's only pennies a day per person because, you know, you start subsidizing. Minnesota's got four sports teams. Only three of the four right now are hoping for more public money. But, you know, there are plenty of other businesses trying every other kind, too. And this does add up to real money. And I have the philosophical belief that ordinary people shouldn't be forced into subsidizing the private investments of very wealthy business owners who don't need it. And if government needs to provide subsidies for these profitable enterprises, why can't we afford to pay for education? Why can't we afford to pay for everything else? And keep in mind, this leads to tomorrow's topic, I'm talking about the other end of the spectrum, people at the bottom who don't get paid a living wage. And I think Diane Schreiner was telling me yesterday, her previous work was with a lot of people who were working two jobs. The husband would work two jobs, the spouse would work a job and a half, and they weren't making ends meet. And those people are paying these same subsidies that you and I might be able to afford, and then, well, it's not a big deal to us. Those same people pay the same subsidies we do. And in the end, I'd argue that that's a reach we shouldn't go to. Even if we thought subsidies were right, we shouldn't be making those folks pay for it. And in the end, it is a choice. Government is going to spend money on some things and not others, and our priorities are different. So tomorrow I'm going to talk about the bottom end of the spectrum. And with that, I wanted to open it up for not just discussion, but I welcome, today I took on an advocacy role on why I think that what we're doing with subsidies is wrong. And I hope that to people who disagree with that, that you challenge or probe even if you don't disagree with it. But I hope we can have a discussion on it. Yes, Paul.
Time Magazine did a thing, I think last year, and Austin, Minnesota was a big part of it, on subsidies for IBP and hog plants and all kinds of things. And so, for an English teacher who doesn't understand that stuff, I begin to get a little window. My question then is, what kind of lobby power is there in existence that goes against the 19 lobbyists, for instance? Does it even exist? And if it does, who pays for them? And how does one get that kind of stuff started?
That's one of the troubles, and that's one of the nature of the problem of corporate subsidies, and that is, if you give a subsidy to any one entity, they have a strong interest in getting it. And everybody else, again, you divide it up among millions of people, no one other person has, are you going to invest $1,000 in trying to stop a subsidy when your total cost for the subsidy may be $100? and you're probably not going to have the time to be aware of it. And if you were there, I've talked about 5-10 different subsidies in Minnesota in this last talk. There are thousands of them in Minnesota. There are thousands in every community, and you don't have the time or resources to do it. In the stadium fight in Minnesota in 97, it was a UCC minister, a woman who formed a group called Fund Kids First, and she was in some ways a loose cannon, but a wonderful woman to have working there. She would just go ranting and raving about how outrageous the process was. Didn't know anything about sports and didn't really care about sports. But she was trying to make a point and was effective. She had a group that I talked to her before this year. Is she going to try again? And well, she just got burned out. It was too emotionally too tiresome for her. Nobody was paying her anything to do this. But she formed a small group, and they had, but their total budget was $2,000. Another guy, a recent college graduate, formed a group. He had called me early on in the fight and said, "Hey, is there a group I can join to do this?" And I said, "No." So he formed one, and they, I think his budget may have reached $6,000-$7,000. He actually got people to donate some frequent flyer miles to fly an economist into town to talk about it. And very sophisticated operation for some kid who didn't have any money. But that was it. There was a group called Progressive, interesting, some progressive groups and some conservative groups were both formed, or they spent some efforts on this, but it was a press release here. It was a there weren't a lot of rallies or anything because there's nobody organized to do it. So it's a lopsided battle. There's no way to do it. Again, the Paul Allen battle in Seattle, remember, he can afford to pay for the election. He can spend millions to advertise on why you should do it, but he can't afford the stadium. And in the Seattle case, I remember I calculated based on what I was reading from the Seattle papers, and it was a good illustration for what we were doing in Minnesota at the time. He outspent his opponents 34-1. And this, in Seattle, there was obviously some organized, funded group, because in Minnesota it wasn't 34-1, it was probably 300 or 400-1. But it's lopsided. There is no other opposition in that sense. A lot of people, public opinion is against it, and the reason it died in 97, the reason I was credited as killing it by my majority leader was, one, I got candidates forced on the record before the election by saying this was going to happen, and people, everybody was ignoring it. They were strategically trying to keep it quiet. By the end of the election, a lot of my colleagues were saying it was the only issue people were talking about. And then when it came time for the election special session, the governor doesn't call a special session in that case when he and legislative leadership want to get something like this until they have the votes. And they didn't have the votes, or they thought they might have, but the public switchboard at the Capitol for all the calls into all of our offices, it literally broke down. They had so many calls coming in against it. Now the public is kind of, we beat that down. They assume it's dead. I think because of that, the other side's going to win. Just because the public is, we've talked about it enough. We're sick of the issue. And it keeps coming back.
It seems that when it comes to corporate subsidies, whether it's to, you know, billionaire team owners or any big business, that there's a very important irony that needs to be exposed, because very often the biggest proponents of these subsidies and the biggest opponents of tying any accountability to the subsidies are often the staunchest supporters of laissez-faire capitalism, and they trumpet the free market all the time. And I have experience with this in Missoula, Montana. We ran a living wage initiative there, trying to, you know, make sure businesses that got our tax money for, you know, whether it was through a tax break or a direct grant, okay, the workers are living wage, pretty radical notion, but what, you know, the biggest opponent to that was the Chamber of Commerce, who said, hey, you know, give them the subsidies, and never mind, you know, we brought up the fact that aren't you putting other businesses at a competitive disadvantage? Those aren't free market principles. So, in essence, what these subsidies are they're privatizing the benefit and socializing the cost. So, I'm wondering how, and we try to get that message out to voters, but it seems that, I mean, a real good case could be made. Like, you're talking about education funding being cut and all of this funding being cut. How do you draw the connections between the public good and money actually being taken from one place and being put into another?
Okay, I'll say I fully agree with your point that it's kind of ironic that the people who talk most about free market and they have government stay out of everything are the ones who come first for the subsidies. It really happens extensively. Interestingly, in 96, 97, the head of the Minnesota Business Partnership, former pro football player and former colleague of mine, gave me a book that they put out every year, What Business Thinks, and it's a survey of CEOs and top business executives, a pretty thick book, polling them on a whole bunch of issues. The year before, they had done one on subsidies for professional sports teams, maybe predicting ahead was going to come. Two-thirds or more of them said they strongly opposed these. Where's the Chamber of Commerce a year later? Well, Carl Pohlad isn't the friend of the business community because most of them don't like it. I mean, there's personality and other things with him and some of the others. But even so, in the end, the Minnesota, Minneapolis Downtown Council, the Chamber of Commerce, AFL-CIO, business and labor groups were all, hey, we want this thing built. We need the subsidy. And I kept trying to say, wait, look, the polls, you guys are taking your own membership. But they don't want to speak up against one of their own in that sense. And it's not, it's ironic and it's perhaps hypocritical, but hey, we'd all be that way. You know, if somebody offered, if you have a chance to have somebody give you a large chunk of money, you might say, hey, please, can I have it? I don't fault them for asking as much as I fault setting up a system that enables them to get it. It's understandable they do it. We are at fault for giving it to them. And I wish there was an easy way to get out what you were suggesting, but I'm not sure there is. But I mean, again, in Minnesota, we've won on two of them so far, and the other two we've given smaller subsidies to, but the Timberwolves one was like 7 years ago now. It took them, it was going to solve it for 30 years, and they came back in 97 and started saying, hey, you know, if you're going to fund these others, we need more help too, because they're going to be competing against us, and it's going to take away our revenue. We're going to need more help. So the 30-year fix was, 4 years later, they were already asking for more. But yes?
I come from Denver, and the Denver Broncos, you know, is really what Denver is all about. my son,
some years recently, especially so.
Yeah. My son is young, as are the majority of people. I think the average age in the Denver area is under 35. He's like 30. And he's been a Bronco fan since he's been about four. And when the stadium issue came up, he voted for it. And I think for two reasons. One is that so many people in Colorado, and I can only speak about that, but I expect it's true elsewhere, really identify with this team beyond anything else. I mean, they don't identify with schools, they don't identify with the symphony orchestra or the museum, but they identify with the sports team. You touched on that a little bit. The other thing is that I think, as a substitute teacher, and I include myself in that, most people have no idea what you're talking about when you talk math and figures. I mean, they don't know math. We're very far behind in any kind of, you know, mathematical ability. And they don't, I mean, you can even tell them, because this has been true with shopping centers and everything else, the roads that go into the shopping center or to the team we pay for, the garages. I mean, they say, well, it brings work. Well, it may bring work for the time that they're building the thing, but then what happens next, you know? But you can't get through. I mean, I was completely unable to get through to my son because all he sees is that they won the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. And then he'll say, yes, but look what it's done to the downtown. Yeah. See, Denver downtown is totally revitalized. And I point out to him, yeah, but every condo down there is $1 million.
Yeah.
So you're not going to move downtown.
If, and in St. Paul, I mean, the mayor of St. Paul who ran on a no new taxes pledge for governor in 98 and then a year later was trying to sell this plant would cost the average family of four in St. Paul $126 a year in new taxes. Well, you could shift them around, I know, and cut other things so you could not raise taxes to do it. But this individual, he's moderate to conservative Republican in his philosophy. You would say he's former Democrat, but he's now a Republican. And government shouldn't be spending all this money. We got to be frugal. We got to do this. Every building downtown, St. Paul is wonderful, got wonderful new development. Every single one of them, from the Science Museum and Children's Museum, which their public purpose behind and their public nonprofits. But every private business, we got 300 jobs from Minneapolis. How do we do it? $100 million in tax increment finance. And he can say, look at all the progress. And if you go to Coors Field, you go to any of these places, they're beautiful places. People like them. Matter of fact, there's a new story on, where was the team? I'm trying to think of. One of the teams has a new arena and is losing. Losing badly, and they thought, oh, maybe it was Pittsburgh. PNC, which the legislator there told me stands for Public Not Consulted. The public voted down a subsidy there. Anyhow, he told me they call it Public Not Consulted, but Pittsburgh's new ballpark, I heard a story on NPR, and they were talking about, or no, it was on the Twins, one of the Twins games, they were talking about how wonderful these new stadiums are. And they had, they were playing Pittsburgh and talking to them, and the guy said, yeah, it's really nice. I mean, people come and, oh, yeah, even though the team is in miserable shape, people are still coming. Yeah, of course, they get kind of bored by about halfway through the game because the games are so lopsided. But then, you know, they go walk around, look at the beautiful new stadium. That works really good 10 years from now. I mean, it does work at first. The first year, they do have much higher attendance because they're beautiful facade. I mean, you can spend... There is no place that we couldn't make beautiful for $300 million. And people love it. And so that's what they always do, the hype. Again, because the media has so much, how can we get the information out? The media seems to be willing to parrot the inaccurate information or the one-sided information without any response. And they keep telling you how beautiful the parks are. I don't disagree. Of course they're beautiful. They better be for that price. But you can't get the word out, and your son is exactly why... In Seattle, why they could get 50.5% to eventually fund the eighth richest guy in the world, several hundred million in a subsidy. And again, it's not the end of it, because of course, as soon as other teams start getting a leg up because they win more, again, 4 years ago in Minnesota, I remember one of the Vikings and Twins broadcasting stations, the CBS network, the local television station invited me and the owner of the Twins, the president of the Twins, and several others to come in and meet with their editorial board. I didn't know a TV station had an editorial board to lobby why our side was best. And I said, you know, look at San Francisco. They built a privately financed ballpark. They're building one. And the owner, the vice president of the Twins, said, that's just bogus. There's no way in the world they're ever going to break ground for that thing. This is 1997. I said, I called out there. I talked with the Giants staff. They said, we are going to build it. We're going to break ground. We're sure it's taking us time, but you got to get all these permits. So in December 97, of course, they start breaking ground. They got a beautiful ballpark, and it doesn't give them as much revenue as others do. But the only reason San Francisco built a privately financed one, the only reason was voters rejected it four times. The team was apparently on the buses headed to Florida. Anyway, I... one more question and we'll break it up. Yeah.
Just a comment. I think it's interesting that after they do get these subsidies, immediately the ticket prices go up. The average family cannot afford to go maybe once a year. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting in Minnesota that until this year, when Minnesota has a good team, the St. Paul Saints AAA team regularly outdrew the Twins because people could afford to take their families to games.
You know, one of the reasons on that comment, one of the reasons the ticket prices go up is not a surprise. It's why they want the new stadium, because they can justify it because the building's more beautiful, more better seating, better everything else. And part of the revenue, and I told you how I calculated how you could pay for itself with the new revenues, I was using the Twins' numbers. You look at their concessions revenues. Woo, they go through there. Why? Hot dogs are $2. They're a lot more than that. I mean, you raise the prices on everything. And you look at any of these facilities. Yeah, I grew up as a big hockey fan. I'm not going to go to Minnesota Wild games. If I took my family, there would be $200 minimum. And we don't put that kind of money up for it. Most people, a lot of people, sure can't. So anyway, thank you for your attention today. And enjoy.